brought to you by bedroombattlefield.com. This is the Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast.
I guess it makes sense to start with a definition. So, yeah, coffee table books are books that are mostly illustrations or pictorial in nature that go along with movies or other literature, and where it's like the artwork from those from that IP. So it might be a movie and then they create like an art book of that, or it might be illustrations from, you know, all Roald Dahl's books. You know, Roald Dahl, the kids author, they might have collected and collated all of the illustrations from, I think it's Quentin Blake that did this one. So I really enjoy coffee table books in general, but I also really like them for the hobby. Have you heard of this before? Is it something that I've mentioned to you and you're new to it?
Yeah, definitely. Like a few jump to mind. I feel like I always open these episodes by bumming up your podcast, but I got one years ago based on an episode you did with Dave Taylor, Armies, yeah. Legions and Hordes. Brilliant book. So that's, yeah. I guess that's a perfect example, isn't it? Something like this.
Yeah, it's like you don't sit down and read it to read a story. You kind of read it to, it's maybe got some light reading. A little bit like if you go to the barber's, and like you've got like 10 minutes or 15 minutes to kill before you get in the chair. It's like, you know, some light reading, you go there. But yeah, I picked up a few and I really like them, and they really give a lot of hobby inspiration. And it's something that's awesome. And if people have got ones that they really like, I'd really like to know about them, because I've not bought one for a good long time, and I'm due to get a new one. But the best ones that I bump into are from the Lord of the Rings, actually. There's two people that have put them together. One is a guy called John Howe, and his one is called a Middle-earth Traveler. And all it is like all of the illustrations that kind of link in with like concept art from the Lord of the Rings movies, and also from the original works. And they're really good because it gives you like a bigger window into the world. It gives you like a bigger insight into the concept art from all the Lord of the Rings concept art. You know, so like all the scenes that you've seen in Lord of the Rings, the movie trilogy, it kind of all the concept art for all the sets and things like that. So there's like, you know, Bag End and like big, you know, Weather Top, you know, like the kind of old watchtower, but also like intricate things like instruments and weapons and all that kind of stuff. And it really gives a really awesome sense of like depth to those worlds. And it's something that's really, really good for hobby, kind of food for thought also. So have you seen any? You've got any? You mentioned the Dave Taylor one there. Is that something that you said that was good? So have you read that? Have you got that?
Yeah, I've got it. Yeah, I got it a few years ago. Really enjoyed flicking through it. The other books that I've got that fit this mold are generally rule books, but I think they still definitely count. Like if you take a Frostgrave or a Stargrave, they are obviously delivery mechanisms for the game itself, but I think they're a lot more than that. Like when you look at the artwork, when you look at the photography, you get a lot of flavor text in them, so they really like, they go beyond just being rule books, don't they?
It depends on a rule book, doesn't it? Some are very stripped back and literally just a delivery of the rules, but some are really deep, like you mentioned, the Frostgrave one there, Stargrave, the Rangers of Shadow Deep. I think maybe because there's a big narrative part of those games, maybe they kind of spend a little bit more time with the artwork because it drags you into that world a little bit more and establish that world a little bit more. Yeah. But that Armies, Legion, Horde one, just going back to that's a case of someone's put together a big army. And there's lots and lots of pictures of the painted miniatures. And then there's a little bit of a story and a background of how it came to be, right?
Yeah, it's almost like a documentation of Dave's hobby projects over the years. And, you know, going back to, I'll put a link to that episode. It was from a few years ago now, but I believe he talked about you know, how he had this perfect mesh in the backgrounds where he had put books together before, and he was obviously a painter as well. So it was just this perfect like skill set to be able to pull something like that off now. And I just heard recently, so there's, have you ever heard of 28 magazine? It's like a,
no.
It's an online magazine with a very sort of like John Blanche, Inquisitor 28 kind of aesthetic. So a digital magazine with, you know, really, really it's a very aesthetic thing. There's a lot of photography and drawings in there. So as much as they do articles, like the visuals are a massive part of it. And I just heard the other day that they are working with Dave to create a book, like basically the type of book that we're talking about now. I'm just having a wee look to see if I could, I'm not sure if it's actually kickstarting at the moment, or, you know, if I had any gumption whatsoever, I would have looked at this beforehand. But I don't have any gumption and have never claimed to. So
it's, like, it's nice that you go to this level of effort for us, mate.
Yeah. Nice. Not even minimum viable effort, just no effort.
But while you're thinking over that, I'll go on. So the Lord of the Rings one has been fantastic for me. So I've got the John Howe one, Middle Earth Traveller. And then there's also a couple. I'm not sure how many there is from John Howe, but there's another guy called Alan Lee. And he does the Lord of the Rings sketchbook and also the Hobbit sketchbook. And that's kind of similar things, like I mentioned before, is like a lot of concept art. And the ones about the cool things about that, you mentioned John Blanche there. And John Blanche is, he's got a very unique style. But I wouldn't say that that Alan Lee and John Howe are in a similar style. I wouldn't say that. But there's a lot of, pencil drawings. There's a lot of black and white pencil drawings. And so a lot of the drawings that are in it, it's not like stills from the Lord of the Rings movies. A lot of them are just like pencil sketches of various different characters, what characters look like and what wildlife looks like. And it's really good just looking through it. Like, even if you're not playing the Lord of the Rings games, even if you're not really that interested in Lord of the Rings, if you're just interested in fantasy settings, there's loads of really good drawings for fantasy settings that will give you lots of ideas for terrain, lots of ideas for battlefields. You know, if you're looking for inspiration to like how to paint certain terrain pieces, you know, it's awesome. So those ones, like, you know, people, if Lord of the Rings fans or just fantasy fans, those John Howe ones, so John Howe, Middle Earth Traveller, and then Alan Lee, Lord of the Rings sketchbook, and then the Hobbit sketchbook, I would heartily recommend those. Those are fantastic. And I've got one more final one, actually, which is the art of the Lord of the Rings, which is from Wayne Hammond and Christina Skull. And this is quite a fancy one, actually. It's quite a nice one. And that is specific artwork from Lord of the Rings that Tolkien drew. So it's like little maps and diagrams and sketches that Tolkien did. And then what they do is they kind of write about what the picture is, how it came to be, where it fits with the stories and stuff like that. So you've got like art from actual Tolkien, and then you've got other people that have interpreted his work into the movies and things like that. So they're really cool to have. And especially the art of the Lord of the Rings is just really, the thing is, like a coffee table book, what our class is a coffee table book. It's like needlessly fancy, you know, it's quite fancy. It's not just something that's, you know, just there just to serve a purpose. It's something that's quite fancy, quite ornate, and you just enjoy taking it out like on a rainy day. And like you'll skip through it for, you know, 30 minutes, 45 minutes. And I find I just flip through it and I'll get a lot of inspiration for terrain and battlefields and different things like that. And it's pretty cool.
So why, I guess, like, one of the big questions here, and I've obviously got my own answer to this, but like, you've got the internet now, like you've got all the inspiration, all the information, all the photos, all the drawings you'll ever need online. So why do we need to distill this stuff into like books? And own those instead.
Yeah. I like the tactile thing, you know, the the feeling of a book, the smell of a book, you know, sitting in a comfy chair and having a book. I think the fact that it's easier to transfer around. So there's quite often I'll be painting something and I'll go and have a quick look at the book and I'll go through it. I think it's different from a screen. I've got a Kindle that I read books on at nighttime, but that's mostly because of the backlight. So I can read it in the dark, you know, so you don't have to bother getting out of bed and turning the light off. But there's something about a book, isn't there? There's like a tactile sense of it. It's something that I can share easier as well. You know, like my daughter's getting older now. So I've not read Lord of the Rings yet. I'm kind of like waiting until they'll hopefully really enjoy it. But I'll kind of flip through the artwork books and it's interesting for them just to see, you know, things. It's easier for them to understand. What do you think about why people have books and why art books exist?
Yeah, I'd agree with like what you've all said there. And there's like numerous ways that I come at this. I mean, it's not funny necessarily when you think about it, but I'm not comfortable if my daughter's in the room and she's doing something, even if it's not with me, if she's sitting playing, I'm not really comfortable sitting on my phone because I don't like the message that sends to her. You know, what's in that phone is interesting. Whereas I'm totally fine reading a book. Obviously, if she then wants to engage with me or wants me to play, I'll tend to stop reading the book and go and do that. But yeah, like having a book, I find that very acceptable to be sitting reading a book. And then when you look at consuming content online, we're obviously blessed with the sheer volume of stuff we could access out there, but it's often distracting or rushed. You know, there are always other things, there's always more to see, whereas a book is finite and you can take time away from the screen. A lot of people associate their work with screens, not everyone, but a lot of people do. So just that analog, it's a perfect analog companion to what is a very analog tactile hobby, isn't it?
A bit the same with rule books. You know, I know that PDF rule books exist and I know that a lot of people love them, but I always prefer to have the rule book, like a physical copy. I always prefer a physical copy of those things. I think it's much easier to deal with. And I guess we're kind of starting to figure out there's like different, what you talked about, the coffee table book, we talked about different types already. So those art books that I've mentioned are very much singularly just art pieces. You've mentioned there about the armies, legions and hordes as like a both a kind of visual feast, but also with some hobby background stuff as well. And then you'd probably say like an ornate rule book is kind of like a step further where it's like something that you can use in a game, but it's got a lot of pictures that you can kind of engage with too, right? So there's like different levels of coffee table book from just literally looking to playing a game and a little bit of looking too, right? There's like different levels. Would there be anything else in between? Or do you think that encapsulates the kind of coffee table book as we would see it?
No, I think that sums up like that. Certainly the books that I own, you know, most of them are rule books, but they're so much more than that. You know, I think recently I picked up Hobgoblin, which is a brilliant example of this. Open Combat is a book I've had for years, which is a great example too. All the Joe McCulloch stuff, the Osprey books, I guess. You know, I don't own a lot of those, but I imagine they lean into that.
So let's dig into that end of the continuum a little bit more. So what did you mention? You mentioned Open Combat, right? So talk about maybe some of your favorite rule books which contain a lot of art pieces that you find interesting.
Yes, Open Combat, I think, was the first that I owned. And again, it's funny to look at this when someone creates a game, and I'm guessing without having the data, like almost any skirmish miniature game that exists, it'll be a PDF or a little couple of sheets or that. And that's great. And it's obviously not the measure of a game's quality, how the rules are presented, but it does help. And if you can get a game, you know, if I look at Hobgoblin, a mass fantasy battle game by Mike Hutchinson, and I could maybe get like a 3 or 4 sheet Word document created fantasy game, or I could get that book, I'm personally swayed with the book because I just feel there's more value in there. You know, the artwork, if there's any lore in there, there's scenarios, there's photography. So I don't know if I'm answering your question here at all, probably not, but
it's good. I get it entirely. Like, you know, you're saying that it's a rule book that you can play as well, but you can also enjoy reading a rule book. So you're maximizing hobby effectively, because when you're not able to get a game in, you could just spend 20 minutes reading through the rule book and just enjoying the rule book as a individual standalone piece without actually playing the game, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's like It's just added value. Even if you didn't ever play the game, I think you would still get a lot of value from a really good book like that.
And I agree with you. There's different rule books that I really enjoy just to kind of, you know, flip through. And there's some games that I've only ever flipped through. I never got around to actually playing, but I still appreciate buying the rule book because I've really enjoyed flipping through it. And I'm hopefully in the future play it. So you mentioned open combat, right? So what is it about that as a rule set that you enjoy? Like, you know, do you know who the art is by? What type of art is it that's in there?
So open combat, from memory, it's been a couple of years since I opened it, but it's almost all photography in there, but really good photography, very miniature agnostic, very flavorful photography. So yeah, a great visual book, and you know, just a lot of good ideas in there, as well as a rule set. There's a lot of, you know, maybe you could try this, you could try that, and it was just, again, it hit me at the right time because I was getting back into the hobby. I was realizing there was a lot outside the Games Workshop, which I'd never really considered before. And just this more open idea of, look, this is possible, that's possible. If you want to do that, why not do that? You know, coming from growing up with Games Workshop, where it was like, well, you know, you can take this, you can take that. Those don't go with them, and you can't do this. It was all about restrictions, whereas, you know, this book was just great for the freedom of it all and this do what you want approach.
That's cool, man. Like, one of my favorite rule books to flip through is one that was just on a Paint Only show recently, Anthems of War. That's really, really cool. It's a really good rule book that's well structured, and it's got a whole bunch of art pieces in. Would you say that, like, that having really good art pieces maybe adds depth to the game, because you can kind of, you know, it does fill out the universe or fills out the setting a little bit more? Like, would you say that?
Definitely. Like, again, two of the books that spring to mind are the, you know, the Frostgrave Stargrave duo. And I believe, I might be making this up, but I believe Joe works with a couple of different artists. I don't think it's necessarily the same person all the time. I could be wrong, but I find the artwork in those books brilliant. They are the sort of, and I'm not like some sort of art critic or that, like, I'll generally just pass over artwork, but they are drawings and paintings that I can just find myself staring at for a minute or two and starting to notice little details and little things. And again, it's just a whole extra dimension to the flavour of what he's putting across, I think.
Yeah, for sure. I really, really agree. And there's a lot of them that are around now where people take that extra level of care and that extra little bit of time to kind of get that artwork. And yeah, it's really cool. Let's take a step now into the middle ground then, which is the kind of art book with like, you know, some information in there, like the armies, legions of hordes. Like, so there's armies, legions of hordes exists. Are you aware of any more books like that, which is more of like a showcase of different armies or a showcase of certain painters? Are you aware of any more of those?
There was a couple that had come up in some of your early episodes. I think it was where you were chatting to folks who specialised in like tanks and weathering, and you know, it was more the diorama side of things. I believe was it Mike Rinaldi? Am I just pulling that?
Mike Rinaldi. So he is like he will be a scale modeller. So that world of scale modeling is crazy. We've kind of talked about that before, how you get that realism in scale, and just you just take a he takes a photo of his models, and if you didn't have something like a coin next to it for scale or for relativeness, you'd think it was a picture of a real car or a real tank or a real shovel, the different things that he's done, right? You know, so it's amazing. So Mike Rinaldi, yeah, but that I would say that's a coffee table book, but also it's very informative because he does this range called SM, which means small model. So he'll do like a individual one-off model, and he'll make an awesome job of painting it, weathering it, making it look super realistic. But then what he'll do is he'll produce a book which is both amazing just to look at the pictures and the process that he's gone through in terms of the progress he made, but he's also documenting his story in terms of a how-to. So that's a kind of a coffee table book in the sense of that, you know, it's great just to look at it, but you can also learn so much from those weathering processes. So I think he does two different types. He does tanks, which is like obviously tanks, military vehicles that he weathers. And that's kind of like, he does like German tanks as a standalone book. And then he does like Allied armor as a standalone book. And then he does different tanks within that with different techniques that he uses. But then also he's got the SM range, which is just small models where he did like a Gundam model, for example. And another one, he did like this kind of, I'm not sure if it was a steampunk submarine, but it was like a very odd looking submarine. So those are definitely coffee table books that are really interesting, but also I guess it's loads more value as well, right? Because it's not just a book that you want to look at in terms of general interest, but it's something that you can learn from. So that's really helpful. And then there's another guy called Adam Wilder, who kind of does the same sort of thing, like scale modeling, but produces these really attractive, really nice looking books, which kind of document the process and document the techniques that they're using, which is pretty good. Yeah, those are really awesome. I know that Dave Taylor went on to do a different range called The Art Of. Did you ever hear about them? So after he did his armies, legion, and hordes, he started to do these books called The Art Of, where he would pick out mini painters that he really liked or people that he knew. And he would do something similar like he did with his book, but it was just called The Art Of. And it was with somebody else. So he could compile that and lay that out for somebody else, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah, I think I remember hearing about that at the time. So it was say, for example, like five or six like really good painters would sort of show them their best of stuff, and that would be in the book. Is that right?
Yeah. So it would be like people that we would know from like YouTube or different things like that, and he'd put together a book. But we did one. Paint All the Minis did one. Did you know that? I'm not sure if we ever spoke about that. Have you seen it? Did you get a copy?
No, I was waiting on a freebie. But it never came.
I'll sort you one out, mate. but I think people can still get. I think it's on DriveThruRPG. I still think it's on DriveThruRPG. I'll check it out as we kind of chat along. But on DriveThruRPG, if you type in "Paint All the Minis Annual 2020," I think it was "Paint All the Minis Annual 2020." Yeah, we did something similar. Brian Cook, legend from Down Under, he kind of did the layout and contributed articles. But what we got at the time is we got people from the community that we had to put forward projects. So we would take pictures of a project that we'd done, and then we had a set of questions that we sent out, and then you'd respond to the questions, and then we would collate the pictures of your project with the question answers, and we kind of put that up there. I think I did like a Nurgle Space Marines force. Guy called Dave Xavier did Napoleonics, I think. Patch Adams did something. A whole bunch of really amazing people did it. You know, because we modeled it a little bit like, do you remember the Beano annual or the Dandy annual
yeah.
that you used to get at Christmas? Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like that, you know, not sure what the equivalent in the US would be, but basically the Beano annual or Dandy annual, they're comics in the UK that would release every week. And at Christmas time, they would do like an annual. This was like before like the internet and phones and stuff, where usually at Christmas time, you know, you get the excitement of waking up and you'd open all your presents, and then you get like a lot of downtime on Christmas Day, right, where parents are cooking or parents are drinking wine, playing charades or whatever, or maybe you had to go and visit grandparents and different things. So like the Dandy annual or the Beano annual was like priceless, because it was like entertainment on Christmas Day during the downtime where you didn't have anything else to do necessarily. So it was like a super bumper copy of your favorite comic that you would read over Christmas. So what we tried to do is you tried to make it just kind of like that, really, but instead of it being like comic strips like Dennis the Menace or Roger the Dodger or whatever it was, we tried to make it just like generic hobby interest stuff. So I still think that's got a little bit of value now, but it was amazing project to do, and I really wish we could do more of those, because it was just really fun seeing people that you'd met online or people that you'd spoke to for different reasons, but all come together to kind of put together like four or five pages, and then another person kind of collate that and lay that out and just kind of like release that into the wild. And we kind of did it in 2020. and it released kind of back in 2020 into 2021. And I really wish we could have got that going. We actually got about 80% through the next one for the final year. But with the things that are happening in COVID and different things that are happening in people's lives, it kind of it fell apart, unfortunately. But yeah, it's not something we did for like a money-making thing. We did obviously charge for it. But with like how much drive-through RPG takes and obviously, you know, paying for the art, and I obviously had to put a little bit of money aside for Brian's time and different. He didn't ask for that. I just wanted to do that for him because he was a really great guy and he was giving his time freely. We managed to kind of break even in the sense of we paid for the artwork for the following year. So the first time I just paid for it. But then we managed to pay for the artwork for the next year. But yeah, we just didn't manage to collate it, which is a real shame. But I'd really love to see something like that. Not like a Paint on Minis thing necessarily, but I really like to see something like that again, because it wasn't people that are doing it for any financial gain. And it wasn't for people who would have enough, with all due respect to Brian, probably. Maybe some of them would, but but the majority of people were putting together stuff and they wouldn't ever have enough to do their own book, or they wouldn't have enough gravitas to sell their own book. So it was like just a book that the community made. And it was amazing. And it's really good. I'm not just being biased, like, you know, but, you know, go and check it out. I think you can buy a PDF version of it, or you can get a physical copy of it still, I believe. But yeah, it's good, man. But I'll sort you one out for sure. For sure. I'll get your address and I won't send one. I'll send, you know, some dog turds in a brown paper bag for you. But yeah, that was good. And I would say that's like a middle ground between, there's a lot of eye candy there, but then there's some information as well. I think there's a rule set in there as well. I'm not sure if we did a rule set for the first one. Well, that was the second one. But yeah, we got some kind of budding rules writers to put together some scenarios and some maybe a whole new game in that as well. So yeah, it was fun to do. It's fun to do that. That was cool. Yeah, sorry to mention that, but yeah, it's pretty interesting. It's a pretty interesting journey.
Totally relevant. Yeah, and a great thing I've been involved in a bit, like you're saying, just to have that book like in your hands and think about, you know, going from idea to physical product.
It was an interesting journey. It was an interesting journey, yeah.
The Bedroom Battlefields Patreon now comes with bonus content, the first of which is a full battle report from White Dwarf issue 166. I read through this iconic showdown from 1993 between Blood Angels General Andy Chambers and Orc Warboss Jervis Johnson as they showcase the new Warhammer 40,000 second edition. Find out more at patreon.com/bedroombattlefields. That's patreon.com/bedroombattlefields. And now back to the show.
I know we want to talk about at some point magazines as well. And, you know, one of the kind of passion projects that jumps to my mind now is there's a online magazine called the Hero Hammer fanzine, run by Josh at the Crown of Command, or maybe not run by him, but he certainly heavily supports it. So there's a lot of folks put that together. There's been 4 or 5 issues made of that. And it's like, when you look at that, it's very based on the 90s White Dwarf aesthetic, but they've captured it perfectly. And again, same idea, you know, battle reports, photos of miniatures, features, columns, and just all great information presented in a really nice way. So
they're really cool to have, man. I kind of miss that magazine culture. I really miss fanzines as well. I know more about, I call them fanzines. I'm not sure what they're called in the model world, but you know, I was a really avid football supporter, soccer supporter when I was growing up, and usually like before most home games, someone would be selling like a fanzine. So it's like a magazine, but it's created by the fans. And those are some of the best experiences that I've had, especially if you go into an away game. So you'd buy the fanzine on the home game when you knew you were going, the next game was away. So you had like maybe a 2 or 3 hour ride in a car. And so you buy the fanzine, you purposely wouldn't read it, and you keep it in the car, you know, or your dad's driving it to the away game and you'd read the fanzine. And I love that. I really like the unpolished rough edges of just fans writing stuff because they think it's great. And I don't know of any that exist in the hobby world, but did you mention that one is a fanzine, or is it like done by a company?
Okay. No, a total fanzine. Yeah, just you wouldn't know it was you would think it was a very and I use the term professional, you know, as like it makes money or not. I don't mean that judging the skills of anyone involved, because it's very professional looking. But yeah, Hero Hammer fanzine.
Hero Hammer. Yeah, that's cool. And I really like them. I really like them because It's just, some of it in there is guff, but I like it how it's just some people coming together to do a thing, and they're doing the thing just to make the thing exist. Is that going to make that? There's something about that that I just love so much. I think we talked about it a little bit previously when we talked about forming a painting habit. It's just, you know what people have gone through to make that happen. And you know that they're not just some fat cat that's getting billions of pounds off people. It's just a bunch of enthusiastic and passionate people that are putting together something that they think is great. And I want to support stuff like that because I think it's amazing. There's actually the fanzine still exists for the soccer team that I support. And I contribute periodically for that because I think it's really important that people do that. And I encourage people to do that. You know, if you've got a little rule set, you know, that you're not really sure what to do with, you know, throw it to one of those guys. You know, if you've got some feelings or thoughts or an opinion on something, write it down and send it to a fanzine because they might not use it. You know, when I've sent in articles to the football one, they've not always used them. But yeah, I'd like to think that even if they haven't used it, they've appreciated that someone's made the effort. You know, and there's sometimes I think that I don't really know if that's valid. I don't really know if anyone's going to be interested in that. But I think you've got to just throw it out there and see if the person that's collating it, you know, thinks it's interesting or not. So in that fanzine, what sort of, you mentioned it's like cut goes off the white dwarf, right? So is it a similar format in terms of they've got battle reps and they've got scenarios? Is that what's in there?
Yeah, I believe so. I'd need to get a proper look through it again. It's been a while, but yeah, the same sort of idea, you know, a lot of photography as well, a lot of, you know, again, it's an aesthetic thing. It's that red mid-90s period, the Goblin Green bases and everything, but really good stuff. This isn't a fanzine, but Miniature Wargame Magazine, that's a magazine that I subscribe to, which comes through every month, and I wrote a scenario for that and got it published, which was really cool. The scenario that I wrote didn't come attached to a specific rule set. It was kind of based on the Song of Blades and Heroes rules, but slightly adapted. I've talked about that in past episodes, but it was more based on the scenario itself. It was Cryo Volcano. It was based on Titan, Saturn's biggest moon. So I just kind of got this scenario, this solo play scenario that I was playing about with, and decided to write it down, and I submitted it to the magazine just off the cuff, and they published it, which was really cool. So,
did you know that they were going to publish it?
Yeah, I had spoke to the editor beforehand, so I think I'd sent him a first draft, and it just needed a couple of wee changes to make it suitable for the magazine, and that was it. So it was a great experience that. To, you know, magazine drops through your door, you pick it up and your own scenario's in there. And I actually heard from a couple of people who got in touch, the readers of the magazine as well, to say that they've enjoyed it. And that was
it
cool.
It was shite.
Yeah,
don't bother again, lad.
Deleted those emails. Yeah.
No, that's cool, man. That's really good that they would make the effort to reach out to you as well, man. That's pretty cool. So which one was that? And what's the name of the magazine again?
Miniature War Games Magazine.
Is a War Games, Soldiers and Strategy is another one as well, right? Is
that That's right, Games, yeah. I don't think I've ever picked that one up, no.
I think they quite often have free sprues from Warlord Games, I think, and different things to make you pick it up.
Yeah.
I used to really like a magazine subscription as well, like, you know, something that comes through each month. And again, same thing, you can kind of read it and things. But I think I got burnt a little bit by just too much advertising in some of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, and you understand that it's a going concern, you understand that it needs to make ends meet, and you understand that advertisements sometimes can be positive because you might get put in contact with something that you might not have noticed before or you might not have run into otherwise. I think, but there's a couple of magazines that I was reading at times that just seemed like they were sales catalogs a lot more than, you know, genuine, serious, interesting content, which was a shame. But if you find a good magazine that you really enjoy, I think it's brilliant. You know, like that monthly thing, it's really good, isn't it? You know, looking forward to when it comes in I think it's like you used to get a magazine subscription for Christmas, didn't you, or something like that. Ah, yes. You know, someone's got me a magazine subscription. You know that every month it's going to drop in your mailbox, and you're like, you're right on it. And then you can look at them as well. You can see the stack slowly getting bigger over the years. It's really cool, man.
Yeah, Miniature War Games Mag. It's great for me. You know, I don't keep up with new releases or gaming trends or anything. I've no real way apart from on Discord if somebody happens to mention something. But you know, the first few pages of that magazine are like new releases or latest news or that. So that's really cool. You know, you maybe see that a games designer you like has got something out, or there's a new miniature range you're interested in. So, and the features themselves are really good as well. Again, it's a magazine like that, because it's very eclectic, you're probably not going to read it cover to cover. There's, you know, there might be some Napoleonic stuff which I have no interest in, but it's not like I grudge the other readers that, because they obviously will be, and there'll be stuff that I'm interested in that they won't be. So I'm quite selective about what I read, but there's usually like one or two really good articles every month for me.
So yeah, like that's cool. I love like things like that where a group could interact and a group can share and a group kind of comes together. That's probably my favorite thing, like especially in magazines and things like that. One thing that I really like that I didn't mention, and I actually forgot the name of, is biggest reasons that I really love Joe McCulloch's work is the Spellcaster magazines.
Oh yeah.
Are you aware of? Yeah. So for when Frostgrave came out, and I don't think there's going to be any more. But I've got like five different Spellcaster like magazines, like the Frostgrave magazine, and that is just like Joe's thoughts on what's happening at the time, and it's scenarios and different rules that maybe weren't like, you know, people say this like, and things that are on the cutting room floor. So you know, like when people are editing a movie or editing a TV show, there's certain bits that have to come out and they end up in the cutting room floor. So it's like all the things that ended up on the cutting room floor or didn't really have a place in any particular rule book. So there's like scenarios in there, there's like rules for different weapons, there's rules for different things. So the Spellcaster magazines are just fantastic, because it also gives you an extra layer of insight into his thinking on certain things. It's always got an introduction, it's always got like thoughts and feelings and ideas. He like recalls conversations that he's had with people about why certain things weren't in or certain things like that. So it's really cool. So the Spellcaster magazines are great as a standalone thing just to read, you know, even if you're not really gonna, I ain't used too many of the rules from those Spellcaster magazines, but they're really good. We also did one for other games. So he does one called Old Bones. So Old Bones is just like for different one of his games. So not Frostgrave specific. So there's scenarios for Stargrave, Silver Bayonet. You know, there is Frostgrave stuff in there, but just really good. And I kind of got that same sort of Christmas vibe from those when they started coming out. And I need to go back and look, actually, because I don't know if there's any more Old Bones. And I know that Joe's been doing a Patreon recently that I really wanted to get involved in, but I didn't, because I really don't like monthly outgoings. But yeah, I think he's started to transfer that onto his Patreon. So if you're interested in that kind of stuff, you can go and check out that over there. But yeah, it's cool, man. I think there's something about a monthly. There's something about a monthly delivery. There's something about a fanzine. There's something about a magazine that's really cool. I don't know if that's just my age and my era. Hopefully younger people are getting as interested and as excited in that in a different way, maybe with a PDF or something. But I'd hate magazines and I'd hate fanzines especially to die out. That would make me really sad, I think.
Yeah, just what you mentioned in the Joe McCulloch one there, there's also the Blaster magazine. I don't know if that's still on the go, but was, you know, I think there was at least four or five editions of that. And again, just collaborations with great games designers. You would get, you know, maybe rules that they'd put together that they hadn't extensively playtested, as if they were going through the full publishing process, but there was like the basis of a game there, or, you know, a very highly developed idea that's maybe went on to become a fully fledged game. But I had a couple of those and they were really good for flicking through as well.
So we kind of like talked through two of the three things that you mentioned at the start. So we got like the fancy rule book. I forgot, but when we think about really nice rule books, I think Moonstone is one of the nicest. The deluxe version of the Moonstone rule book is one of the best rule books that I've ever read through. Moonstone is a kind of fantasy skirmish game that's quite whimsical in nature. It's a game where different factions are trying to find these moonstones, and they pop up at various different places, and some are easier to find than others. But the world that has been created in that Moonstone rulebook is fantastic, and it's really great to see Moonstone popping up more and more as like a mainstream game, because it started up as a peripheral game, but to see it kind of become more and more mainstream has been something that's really fantastic. And it's a really great game in itself, but it's also a fantastic rule set, and the artwork and the stories that have been created into this world is amazing. It's really, really fun.
I've got a big pile of White Dwarfs from the 90s, which I flick through, again, harking back to magazines, maybe talking sort of late 93 to late 97, I think. I was almost every month getting those, and I still read through them, I still keep them on rotation, I still find new content, whether I read it back in the day and forgot about it, I'm not sure, but, you know, last night I was sitting in bed with my White Dwarf reading an article from like 1995 about special characters, and a lot of that content, it hasn't dated as well. Like, I know there will be, like, you know, if they're literally talking about the new 40K and it's the 40K that came out in 93, I know that's theoretically old, but you know what I mean? Like, a lot of the stuff is evergreen, and it stands up to this day as well, so...
I quite like its tone, and it's it was quite a lot of its tongue in cheek. It's not fully professional and sterile. I think sterile probably. There's a lot of content that you consume like nowadays, and it's quite sterile. You know what I mean? It's like algorithmical. You know, and you even see that on YouTube, don't you? Where people say, "Oh, give it a like. It's good for the algorithm," and it's just like, yeah, I get that, mate, but. Where's the people that are like, just, they don't really care, they're just doing stuff, and if you like it, great, and if you don't, no problem. And I kind of get that feeling. I didn't read White Dwarf at the time, but, you know, I've read a few, like, you can buy back copies, and, you know, I've got a few mates that have had it, and they've kind of passed on copies to me, and it just seemed like it didn't apologize for itself, and it was what it was, and people were a bit odd. And people looked a bit odd. You know, you sometimes get the pictures of the people that you know, you've got like Dangerous Dave with his goblin army, and then you've got Colossal Gary with his, like, you know, dwarf army or whatever. And you've often got like a daft picture and like proper nerdy. And I don't know, I kind of missed that. I kind of missed that, like, just unapologetically myself and unapologetically imperfect. I kind of missed that. Do you find that White Dwarf, is that your experience of White Dwarf from that era also? Or am I misplaced with that feeling?
No, definitely. I think, like, we've talked about the fanzine ethos or feel. And I think that magazine, as much as it wasn't a fanzine, it was a professional published magazine, but it still had that feel. It still had that... you know, feel of, here's just some guys who love what they're doing and they're just getting together, and, you know, it almost looked casually thrown together, whereas that, you know, I expect it wasn't like that at all. I expect it was very, very hard work to hit that monthly schedule, but it had a lot of fun about it. I bought a modern White Dwarf a couple of years ago, just purely out of interest, and it was about, I'd say, £8, and you know, it was a well put together magazine, but I didn't really care for it too much. And it confuses me in a sense. I know Games Workshop are a business and they like money. They like to satisfy the shareholders. But again, to me, you mentioned like sales catalogues, and to me, White Dwarf could be a sales catalogue for them, and they could almost give it away free because it's advertised all their products. So I'm a bit confused to why they sell it for that amount of money. Maybe it's just because so many people buy it anyway. I don't know. So
yeah. Well, they say that sometimes, don't they? That, you know, you have to charge a certain amount for people to take it seriously. So maybe if they gave it away for free, like, people wouldn't take it seriously. So they have to charge a certain amount. And then maybe they kind of experimented with a few different price points and they sold the same amount regardless of what price it was, right? I don't know. But I didn't get it for too long. But when I first started the hobby, I bought a few White Dwarfs when it was coming out weekly. And it was pretty rough, to be honest. It was just literally a case of, here's the new releases for this week. And that was pretty much it. So I didn't really have the subscription for long. I mean, the photography was amazing. and of the models, that was amazing. But it was, you know, it was all fur coat and no knickers, so to speak, you know, which is a little bit disappointing. But yeah, man, so we got the kind of the fancy rule book. We've got the kind of the interesting middle ground, which is artistic and information as well. As we circle back to like just the visual, there's one final one, what I've been keeping under my vest, because you mentioned the artwork of Frostgrave and stuff like that. So my favorite coffee table book, like bona fide coffee table book, as I would understand it, the coffee table book being significant art features, it's actually called The Wizard Eye. So The Wizard Eye is the art of Frostgrave. So Joe got together with Dimitri and Kate Bermack, who do the majority of the artwork for Frostgrave, if not all of the artwork for Frostgrave. And I think Joe picked out his favorite art pieces. And then for all of those art pieces, both Joe and the artist talk about some of the details that you might have missed from some of the art pieces. And they also talk about how it came to be and some funny stories between, you know, what happened and how and why it looks like certain things. And what's also cool is that in quite a lot of them, Dimitri, he talks about how he visualizes things, and sometimes he makes models of the picture. So if he's talking about a wizard who's maybe casting a fireball, to figure out how the light should look on the person, he like dresses his wife up in a costume and like gives her a light bulb to hold, and then he takes a picture of that, and he uses that picture as a basis to create the artwork. So his wife and him sometimes are in the pictures, because it's their frame that's been used as the basis for the picture. That's really good. Have you seen that book before? Have you heard of that book, The Wizard Eye?
I believe I possibly have, but no, I've never had a look at it or that. I definitely need to check that out. I'm just, it's just made me think of what I'm looking on Amazon just now. There's a book, Blanche, The Rise of Grimdark. This came out in November 2023. A book about John Blanche, obviously. I think this is a biography, but I'd imagine there's a lot of artwork in this. I could be wrong. But that's maybe one that would fit into this criteria as well.
But so it's like all in the Wizard Eye, it's like all the artwork from like the boxes, you know, that there's official Frostgrave miniatures from North Star, right? So it's like the artwork that's been commissioned for the boxes. It's Joe's favorite art pieces from all of the Frostgrave books. And it's really cool because, like I said, because of the explanation, they talk about the picture. And it just gives you an opportunity to spot things that you might not have noticed. And I think you mentioned that before when you're flicking through the Frostgrave books. You know, there's times where you just spend time looking at the pictures, and there's things that you just haven't noticed, or there's things that draw the eye more than others. So that's really cool. But yeah, going back to John Blanche, as you mentioned there, like, yeah, he's got a very iconic style, right? You know, you see a picture and you immediately associate that style with that individual, right?
Yeah, I definitely, that's a book I definitely need to try and pick that up at some point, because yeah, I mean, he's like inseparable from Games Workshop history. When you look at, you know, everything they've done, you could trace everything back to his drawings and paintings and artwork. Just a fascinating guy with a brilliant style.
I think it's really cool to note that, like, you probably look at the pictures and you don't immediately think super polished, super smooth, but it's very rich and it's very deep art. Does that make sense? And I like that. I like pictures that are very deep and they draw you in, and there's lots of things to look at, and it's not just something that looks interesting from far away, but there's not actually a lot to it. It kind of draws you in and it makes you think about it a lot when I look at his artwork.
Yeah, I remember, again, the first White Dwarf I got was October 93, and that was when the new 40K had come out, and it was that cover with it's a Blood Angel on the front, Blood Angel's cap, and he's got his fist raised up, and they're fighting orcs. And that was the cover of the 40K box. And I used to like drawing when I was wee. Used to like just sit in my drawing book, and whether I would come up with my own stuff or whether I would try and copy stuff. And I remember I started copying that image, that painting. And I remember as I was doing it, how many little sub stories and background stories were going on in it. I remember that even as a kid, like, you noticed more and more, and you're like, oh, that's happening and that's happening. Just all these tiny little stories. Whereas you glance at something like that and it looks very chaotic and, you know, it looks like there's no organization behind it. But there are often stories in these paintings or drawings that maybe take a while to emerge. They're not immediately obvious to you.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like I said, it draws you in and it's rich. One of my favorite ones, I'm not sure who the artist is, but it's the Crimson Fists Space Marines. It's like the Crimson Fists that are obviously making some sort of last stand on an area of higher ground. I think they're fighting the orcs as well. It's obvious that a lot of them have been taken out. They're not having a particularly great time, but they like stand in defiant. So like the Crimson Fist picture is one that's my favorite. And I'd love to get a print of that, I think, in the future. I think that'd be really, really cool. That was a lot of the GW lore in the past, wasn't it? Where there was intentionally a lot of gray space. There was intentionally a lot of gray space. There was intentionally a lot of loose ends. There was intentionally a lot of snapshots set up because that's where the players would insert their imagination into their games, right? So like when you're looking at that box art and you're seeing, oh, what's that guy doing? And who's that guy pointing his flamethrower at? Who is the captain trying to punch, you know, that you can't see? It's like those were the opportunities that you had as a player to kind of, you know, create the narrative and lead the narrative. And I'd just like to be a fly on the wall and just watch that whole process and watch the artist creating those scenarios, you know, like creating those little stories. That'd be pretty amazing, right? Because what we look at for maybe 45 seconds or what we look at for 5 minutes has taken significantly longer than that to think of and to compose and to create, right?
It reminds me of, there was a book I read a couple of years ago called, was it 10,000 Weeks? That could have been 10,000 Weeks. The theory was, you know, the average human lives 10,000 weeks. My number could be totally off here, but the guy was talking about like the quickness of life, and it wasn't a depressing book. It was just that you can't do everything, and you need to pick a few things that make you interested or happy, and just concentrate on them, and not try and do too much that you do nothing at all. Yeah. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
But
he
one of his chapters got into this. You know, he was profiling somebody, and it was someone who had clients that they would take to an art gallery, and one of these exercises was, you're going to pick any painting, or maybe he picked it for you, but basically you're going to spend 3 hours with this painting. You're just going to, you could sit down and look at it from across the room, you could look it up close, you know, but you're going to basically spend 3 hours just looking at this picture. And it detailed the experiences of the people who'd done it. And, you know, the first hour, as you would expect, was absolutely maddening. Like they were just thinking, like, I don't know what I'm doing here. Like, this is stupid. But almost all of them said, like, after 2 or 3 hours, things really started to emerge in the art, even if they weren't art critics or remotely qualified to interpret a painting, if you like. They were still able to gradually unpack certain things. And again, I know nothing about art, but I imagine there is a lot of that in, you know, these classic images that we see. Maybe, you know, the modern artists too that are working with like, say, Joe McCulloch and that. There's a whole world there that is yet another part of this hobby that I think a lot of us don't pay too much attention to. So
it's interesting, isn't it? It's I really enjoyed that. It's the same with music as well, how you can listen to a song and it's quite simplistic, but you can, if you actually try to break that rhythm down and try and appreciate the individual musical components as a separate entity, and then also how they play together as a whole. It's very similar with art, isn't it? I think I mentioned it before with music, that I think music is, or stories, I think stories are inherently woven into our nature as humans. And I'd probably say the same with art. You know, and I probably, you know, believe that to be true from, you know, cave paintings and things like that. I think that human beings create art. I think that if you give human beings some time, some leisure time, to get bored, I think they start to do amazing stuff. And I think that's who we are as human beings. It's like we are able to be self-sufficient. And then with that time that we earn for ourselves through being, you know, hunter-gatherers and things, that's when we start showing our human side. It's like music, it's art, it's, you know, those kind of stories that we share with each other. That's the humanness that I really appreciate, really. The stuff that is not surviving, but the stuff that we do when we've got time that we don't have to be hunting and gathering. It's pretty cool, man. I don't think there's anything better for me than just stories, music, and art. I think those are the three of the core components of who we are, I think.
Have I ever told you about there's caves not far from here down on the coast, and they've got Pictish carvings and drawings in them, but you know they've got more contemporary artwork, if you like. You know, you get the odd phallus that's been drawn in the last 2 years or whatever. With some
they got that on Hadrian's Wall. No, they got that on Hadrian's Wall, right?
I'm talking about modern graffiti. I'm not talking about Roman graffiti.
I think there's always been someone drawing a penis age. Give me a fella with some time on his hands and a silly, you know, immature attitude, and you see a penis drawn somewhere, man.
It's just funny to see, like, I'm not saying the Picts wouldn't have done this themselves, but, you know, whatever they've carved or drawn in there is like got this contemporary graffiti alongside it. So it's an artistic experience of predating Scotland, I guess. But I wonder in 1,000 years. If they'll still be those.
It'll be on Time Team, something like that. This one dates from the Pict era. This one is much later. What's that? What's that, John?
The Burberry era.
it's a penis, John. I don't know, like, but this, something compels us to be fixated on that, right? Well, it's pretty interesting stuff. But yeah, man, there you go. Maybe there'll be a coffee table book on just phalluses through the years from different civilizations. I'm sure the Egyptians had people that were doing that. I'm pretty sure you can find like a cave painting of that. Pretty sure you can get one.
Yeah, that could be our next Kickstarter, or our first Kickstarter, I guess. So stay tuned for that. But I've enjoyed, again, really philosophized on a topic that neither of us are remotely qualified to speak about. That's what I like best about podcasts.
We have our own spin on it.
Yeah.
And yeah, man, and just to kind of round it off, like, it's something that you can buy, and it's something that you can appreciate for a long time. And I think something that you said very early in the episode where you can buy a rule set and you can just enjoy it for a long time, just looking at just appreciating the rule set for what it is in its entirety. The rules, the scenarios, the ideas, but then the artwork and the kind of the layout of different things. It's possible to buy a rule set and not play it so much, or maybe not play it at all, but still appreciate it. And it's good just to look through a book. It's good to take that time. And I think you mentioned there about the sharing. You mentioned that you don't really like being on electronics with your daughter around. I do that quite a lot. I'll sit in my chair and I'll be reading a book, and I'll just, you know, one of the kids will come over and say, "What are you doing?" And I'll just talk through it, you know, and we'll look at the pictures, and she'll say, "Yeah, that guy looks gross." And it just, I don't know, it's a lot more social than just an electronic, you know, especially a phone, something that's quite small, or, you know, an iPad or something. I think there's something great about just sitting together with a book and flipping through a book. It's great.
Our question of the month for January is, tell us about your favourite named character on the tabletop. Maybe it's the overconfident warrior who always charges headfirst into danger, or the sneaky rogue who somehow always survives by the skin of their teeth. Perhaps you've got a hero with a legendary backstory, or a character whose misfortune has become a running joke. No matter who or what your named character is, tell us all about where you got the miniature, how you came up with the name and backstory, and any funny or memorable moments that you've had with them. Submit your clip by going to bedroombattlefields.com/voicemail, and I need them in by Thursday the 30th of January.
But have we got time for like a hobby recap? What have you been doing? So last time, it's probably 6 weeks ago since we last talked. So what have you been doing, any hobbying over the Christmas New Year period? Any games or any painting?
I've been working on this solo scenario game-wise because I've got no friends, but I'm quite happy with how that's progressing. And then on the painting front, I just finished up this week. I put photos up on bedroombattlefields.com, but Plague Bearers in 15mm, they were 3D prints on Etsy that I really liked. And I've added them to my 15mm bad guys army. I've got a Great Unclean one as well painted up. So what about you? What's on your desk?
I'm still painting my Colonial Marines. I'm not sure if I told you, I pulled a muscle on me back. So I was on a plane for a long time over the Christmas break, and my back was really sore, really tired, but fine. And then I picked my daughter up at an awkward angle, and I kind of clunked my back. My back kind of went... And kind of, I felt something slide over something else in a big clunk. I've been quite slow the last few weeks, but I'm painting the Colonial Marines from Another Glorious Day in the Corps, the Gale Force 9 game. So like the Aliens 2, the Aliens movie, Alien 2, the kind of Colonial Marines from that, your flamethrowers and the smart guns and stuff. They're coming along nice. I've kind of finished up all the basics on them and put the first wash on. So I'm starting to kind of, you know, put the mid-tone on those guys. But I also caved in and I bought a new faction for A Song of Ice and Fire. So a new faction came out, the Brotherhood Without Banners. I'm not sure how much you know Game of Thrones. Are you aware of the Brotherhood Without Banners?
No, I watched the TV show, but I'm not aware of them, no.
Yeah, well, they're in there pretty briefly. You know the Beric Dondarrion guy, the guy with the eye patch and the flaming sword?
I think so. It was years ago, I seen it, but...
Yeah, there's a faction called the Brotherhood Without Banners, and basically there are a bunch of guys that live in the woods and help out the small folk and bits and bobs like that. And so when I got my A Song of Ice and Fire factions, Lannisters and Starks, I only got those factions because like they were the factions that first got released on the first original Kickstarter. So I've kind of kept those factions going. But the Brotherhood Without Banners is the first faction that's come along that I really, really wanted because of the aesthetic. So they're like the kind of not one set faction with all the same uniforms because they're all a group of people that come from all different backgrounds. So there's like some more peasanty guys, then there's some guys from a certain house, and there's another guys from a different house, and some are like professional knights and some are just peasants. So there's a real hodgepodge of different armors and different weapons and different things like that. So the aesthetic is really cool. So that came out over the last month. So I caved. I really didn't want to get a new faction because I've got two. But I thought I'd treat myself. You know, I had a birthday over Christmas and obviously a Christmas as well. So I thought, you know what, a little present for myself. I'll get the Brotherhood Without Banners. So I got like the core set, and then there's a set of knights and then a set of attachments. But the reason why I bring it up is because you're into games, mini agnostic games, like Rangers of Shadowdeep and something. But there's in this faction, and also in A Song of Ice and Fire in general, they have like heroes and attachment boxes. So they have heroes and attachment boxes, which is not one set unit. It's just a collection of like 6 to 8 individual models that have got really interesting aesthetics, and some are characters that aren't on the battlefield and some are warriors. So in the Brotherhood Without Banners Heroes box, there's like a whole bunch of people that you could use for RPGs. You could use them for Rangers of Shadowdeep, and it's definitely worth a look for people who maybe aren't aware of the Song of Ice and Fire game and even have no interest in playing the Song of Ice and Fire games. You can pick up those Heroes boxes and attachment boxes. And they're a decent price as well. They're a lot cheaper than lots of other minis. They're really good quality, but you can definitely use them in any kind of fantasy setting game, really. So yeah, I picked up some of those. So I'm hoping to paint those up at some point over the next 4 months, 5 months. My back's getting a little bit better now, so I'll be getting back to the painting table this week, I think.
I can relate with the injury. Like I mentioned to you before, I'd started running again. And as you do with things like that, I was like, it just started off like, let's go out and have a wee run and feel a bit better during the winter. And then about a week later, I'm like looking at the local races and that for the summer. And I'm like, there's the 10K. And it was the leaderboard from last year. I was like, I could win that, which I obviously could remotely come close. But you start getting that wee seed in your head. And then I woke up one morning just before Christmas, hadn't even ran the day before, and my knee was in agony. I thought I'd been maybe sitting on it the wrong way. I spend a lot of time on the floor. I don't get to sit on a seat in this house because they're always got toys on them.
Because you're a bad boy. You sit on the floor. Only good boys sit on the
floor.
Sofa.
But that's like coming up for a month now, and it's no better. I've been going to the physio, and she reckons it's a tendonitis. So I've not been able to do anything. I've not been able to run. I've not been able to play football. I could still go out for a walk, but it's really sore after it. So it's so frustrating because I was really enjoying doing the running. So
I've never been so scared of a sneeze before I had bad back. You know, it's just like, it's honestly, mate, it's the word. Injuries suck. And it's why it's really important to be active and stay active. Because I think if you are active and then you stop, it's harder and harder to get back the older you get. So even if you can just go out for a walk, mate, like you're saying, like, you know, just go out for a walk, just do something. Because I think if you start being more and more sedate, it gets harder and harder to kind of to come out of. So hopefully you can get back running. I enjoy running. I run quite a lot. I that's my podcast listening time. I'll kind of put the earpods on and I'll go and have a jog and I'll listen to a podcast. Like,
but, you know what? As well, yeah, I hate making what I think you call dad noises in front of the wee one as well. You know, like if I'm getting up off the floor, I hate like groaning or letting. But sometimes you just find yourself doing it. It's just a habit, I suppose. Like you're getting up and you're like, oh, and I hate doing that because it's like, I don't want her to think, oh, like you get old and you get knackered and, you know, maybe that is true, but it'd be nice.
Yeah, no, I've been like that with my back. Honestly, I couldn't lift because it was on the left-hand side. It was like the top of my pelvis, the back, my bottom of my back, the top of my pelvis on the left-hand side at the back on my back, right? And I couldn't lift my left foot like 6 inches off the ground. I couldn't. And then also it took me, when I first did it for about a week, it took me about 3 minutes to get out of bed. I'm not lying. Like it took me about 3 minutes and because it was just so painful and I had to just find the right way to bend and the right way to move. And I could see my kids looking at me with like, just like a weird face. I don't know how to explain the face, but it was like, cause they'd never seen me like that. They'd never seen me injured.
Did that kind of make sense? Like
Like kind of like that. It's like the first time they'd seen me like, you know, not superhuman. Cause I've always been the superhuman character, right? You know, I've always been fit, always been healthy, like, you know, doing push up, bench pressing them, picking them up, throwing them around, all that kind of stuff. So this is the first time that's been kind of chipped away at this immortal figure has been chipped away at. So you can see them looking at me and go, are you okay? Like my wife had to tell me, put my socks and shoes on, man. And that was probably embarrassing. Like first week, I couldn't put trousers on. I couldn't put my boxer shorts on. Like I couldn't bend. I couldn't lift my foot off the ground to put my underpants on, mate. It's just so demeaning. I sent a shout out. I was like, this is a look into the future. This is 30 years from now. You know, we're both senile. It's like I have to help you put your socks on. You have to help me put my socks on. Something to look forward to for us both. Yeah, but well, hopefully you get fit and active again, mate. Hopefully, fingers crossed.
Yeah, I mean, we could do more regular episodes when we're in the same nursing home together because we'll have a good gaming setup in there. Coronation Street on the telly, and we'll get a wee gaming table on the go. Tartan rug on the lap as well. So
yeah, thermos flask. Yeah, that'd be all right to make that. That's a great shot, actually. That'd be
it doesn't
cool.
actually
that
sound
now.
That bad.
No, it sounds brilliant. It sounds brilliant. It's like, sign me up. I go there now. Nice. Well, anyway, mate, I appreciate the time as always. And I really want to know if anyone else has got any coffee table books. So anyone that's got anything from that spectrum. So the spectrum was kind of like fancy rule books. Middle ground was like kind of like some eye candy, but also some information there, either in a magazine form, fanzine form, or kind of like official book form, or then equally like a bona fide coffee table book, which is just all art. I'd be really interested to know, even if it's not linked to a game, as because I mentioned the Lord of the Rings stuff there. Like, I'd be really interested to know if there's like Star Wars ones, or you know, other movie IPs that be aware of, that there's like conceptual art coffee table books. That'd be pretty amazing.
Lovely jubbly. Aye, always good to chat, Dan. Thanks again for coming on the show. We've got a load more topics to fudge our way through as well in the near future, don't we? So I'll get you back on in the next week or so and we'll kick on with that. Our philosophical journey through the hobby. So, and we could catch up on our injuries as well, assuming we're both still alive.
Thanks very much for listening to this episode of the Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast. If you enjoy the show, then please do share it with someone else you think might enjoy it too. And be sure to check out our Discord community of like-minded hobbyists, which you could find at bedroombattlefields.com/Discord. It'd be great to see you in there.